Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average up 396, closing at 16,466. S&P 500 up 46 at 1940. NASDAQ Composite up 107 at 4,613. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 5 basis points at 1.93%. Oil up 46 cents at $33.68 per barrel. Gold up $2.80 at $1,118.80 per ounce. Silver up 2 cents at $14.34. It's Friday and the last trading day of the month. For the week, the Dow gained 2.3%, the S&P 500 added 1.7%, the NASDAQ increased 0.5%. That left the Dow down 5.5% for the month, or a loss of 959 points. The NASDAQ lost 7.9%, or 394 points in January, the largest monthly loss since May of 2010. The S&P 500 was down 103 points, or 5%, although at one point last week the S&P was down 11% since the start of the year. An index of U.S. Treasury bonds returned 1.8% for January, which has been the best month of the year for bonds, at least over the last few years. The yield on the 10-year note dropped 24 basis points for the month. Gold and silver shared the safe haven spotlight with Treasuries. Gold gained $58.60, or 6%, for the month. Silver added 53 cents, or 3.8%, year-to-date. The dollar has gained just over 1% year-to-date, but the dollar index is still below November highs. And even with today's gains, oil closed out the month of January with a loss of $3.37, or right at 9%. The U.S. economy expanded at a slower pace in the fourth quarter. Gross domestic product rose at a 0.7% annualized rate in the 3 months ended in December, after a 2% gain in the third quarter. GDP expanded 2.4% for the year for the second straight year, led by the biggest gain in consumer spending in a decade. Household purchases rose at a 2.2% annualized pace in the fourth quarter, and that was actually down from 3% in the third quarter. So consumer spending slowed in the quarter. But businesses saw big cuts in spending. Business investment decreased at a 1.8% annualized rate, the first drop since the third quarter of 2012, and that compared with a 2.6% pace in the third quarter. Businesses cut spending on stockpiles to try to pare unwanted inventories. That effort trimmed growth by 0.5 percentage point in the fourth quarter. One bright spot, home construction, up at a solid 8.1% annual rate. Separately, the Labor Department reports wages and salaries rose 0.6% in the fourth quarter. That's the same pace as in the previous 3 months, indicating gradual tightening in the labor market has yet to put pressure on employers to boost pay. Wages of all employees, including government workers, advanced 2.1% from the same period in 2014. Bank of Japan said it would adopt a negative interest rate policy for the first time. They're trying to kickstart the world's number three economy. The central bank said it cut the deposit rate it pays on cash parked at the Bank of Japan by commercial banks in excess of legally required reserves, cut it to minus 0.1% from the previous plus 0.1%. The goal was to push down borrowing costs across a broad time spectrum to stimulate inflation. Now, just 1 week ago, Bank of Japan Governor Haruhiko Kuroda said he was not thinking of adopting a negative interest rate policy for now, signaling that any further monetary easing will take the form of an expansion of its current massive asset buying program. So this really was shocking news for global markets. The yen tumbled after the announcement. The benchmark TOPIX index rose 2.9%. Money is pouring into bonds all over the world, pushing yields lower. Germany's 10-year yield is off 6 basis points at 0.33%, making for the lowest reading in 9 months, and yielding about the same as a U.S. 3-month note. Now, these negative rates in Japan are not being applied at the retail level. This is directed at the banks and the reserves held by banks with the central bank. But if the negative rates last long enough, it could work to the consumer level. For now, the idea is to nudge banks to make loans and circulate money through the economy, with a little punishment for banks that hoard the cash. In theory, interest rates below zero should reduce borrowing costs for companies and households, driving demand for loans. In practice, there's a risk that the policy might do more harm than good. If banks make more customers pay to hold their money, cash may go under the mattress instead. We've seen negative rates over the past year or so in the Eurozone and Sweden, Denmark, and Switzerland. We don't really know yet how it will all play out, and we don't have historic data to guide us. This time it really is different. I know you've heard that phrase before, oh, this time it's different, sure, sure. But this time it's true. For the Eurozone, and now for Japan, rates are at the lowest levels in at least 500 years. And yes, Deutsche Bank did look back that far in sovereign debt records. So, what do negative interest rates tell us about the global economy? Well, we appear to be in a long-term, low-growth, low-inflation environment. Perhaps the central bankers, including the Fed, need to rethink their ideas about acceptable levels of inflation. Perhaps a 2% rate of inflation is too low. Today's action by the Bank of Japan will almost certainly influence the Fed's thinking on future interest rate hikes. At the very least, it should lead to discussion of how monetary and fiscal policy is conducted and coordinated on a global scale. And for investors, we need to consider whether the U.S. economy really is so much stronger than our global business partners. And we should also consider the spread between global and international rates and the spread between U.S. long-term and short-term treasuries, and it is flattening, and you know that's not good. Also, the impact of negative interest rates on a variety of asset classes, including equities, currencies, and commodities. Oil prices started the session with big gains but paired losses throughout the day as the dollar index gained more than 1%. It proved near impossible to prop up oil on the notion of a Russia-OPEC deal to cut production. The Wall Street Journal reported that an Iranian oil official said the country would not join an immediate OPEC production cut. The paper said Iran wants to boost crude exports by 1.5 million barrels a day. Meanwhile, Baker Hughes reports energy firms in the U.S. cut oil rigs for the sixth straight week, and they're expected to shed even more. Puerto Rico plans to propose a debt exchange to investors offering to swap existing bonds for two new types of securities to help the U.S. Commonwealth alleviate its debt burden. Both classes of debt would delay payments, giving the island some time to make fiscal adjustments, try and spur some economic growth. One would eventually pay interest at 5%, while the other would carry a value to be determined by Puerto Rico's fiscal health. The World Health Organization is warning that the Zika virus is spreading explosively in the Americas. They'll convene a special meeting on Monday about whether to declare a public health emergency. And while there is no approved vaccine, U.S. health officials and drug makers could start working on an experimental vaccine soon. Both GlaxoSmithKline and Sanofi are considering developing a treatment. Xerox said it would split into two companies, one holding its legacy hardware operations, the other its business process outsourcing unit, in which activist investor Carl Icahn will get 3 board seats. The company, whose shares have fallen more than 30% in the past 12 months, has been trying to turn itself around by focusing on software and services as businesses cut cost and a switch to mobile devices hit demand for printers. Fourth quarter earnings reporting season well underway, with S&P 500 companies on average expected to post a 4.1% drop in earnings. That's according to Thomson Reuters. Excluding energy companies, earnings seen as rising 2.1%. Chevron reported today, first quarterly loss in more than 13 years, as the oil producer struggled to cope with plunging oil prices that are eroding profitability across all its divisions. The company posted a fourth quarter net loss of $588 million, or 31 cents per share, compared with net profit of $3.4 billion, or $1.85 per share, in the year-ago period. The last time Chevron posted a quarterly loss, third quarter 2002. Chevron last month announced it would cut its 2016 budget by 24% to $26 billion. It's time now for another edition of
Banks Behaving Badly.
In today's edition, we take you back to last summer when we told you tens of thousands of Malaysians gathered in Kuala Lumpur, protesting, demanding to know how almost $700 million linked to the debt-laden government investment fund, One Malaysia Development Berhad, or 1MDB, ended up in Prime Minister Najib Razak's personal bank accounts. 1MDB was set up by Najib 6 years ago. It's been the subject of intense scrutiny for borrowing $11 billion to fund questionable acquisitions. $6.5 billion of that debt came from three bond deals underwritten by Goldman Sachs, which charged nearly $600 million in fees and resulted in little or no development in Malaysia. We now have an answer from the Attorney General appointed by Najib to investigate Najib. The AG says the $700 million that just appeared in the Prime Minister's personal bank account was a personal gift from the royal family of Saudi Arabia, and there was no bribery or corruption, so the Prime Minister has been cleared of all wrongdoing because, hey, sometimes wealthy Saudis just hand out really lavish gifts. Meanwhile, Tim Leisner, chairman of the Goldman Sachs Southeast Asia Ops, is taking leave of absence from Goldman and moving from Singapore to L.A., and that's the way they do it. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. There you'll find text, audio, author interviews, free podcast, and much more at eatthebankers.com.